You're listening to Sound Poetry. I am your host, David Gilmore. This is Radio Tacoma, 101.9 FM, and you're listening to Sound Poetry. I'm your host, David Gilmore. I'm very happy today to have with me Lynn Kopelke of Enumclaw, for want of a named place that he abides by. But Lynn is an award-winning Western artist, and an award-losing, he says, cowboy poet.
Indeed.
He's been busy as an artist and a poet in recent years, the cowboy poetry being very important to him. For 40 years, he says, he spent his adult life not painting enough pictures and not writing enough poems. Now he's remedying the situation. He hangs out in his home studio, just 5 miles north of the old pickle factory outside scenic Enumclaw, Washington. Welcome to Sound Poetry, Lynn.
Thank you, David. I appreciate it. I'm happy to be here.
And we're going to enjoy some recitation and perhaps some reading, but you won't probably be able to tell the difference because Lynn is quite the performer, and we're looking forward to your performance.
Sure. Oh. Thank you.
Would you like to begin where you wish?
Yes. Let me start with a poem that gives you some idea of the land in which I dwell, the area that I live in. I call this poem A Couple of Mules. Here at the base of the foothills, amongst the Herefords and the Derrys, the ragwort thrives on my place along with the blackberries. And here at the base of the foothills, when the season's right, moon hangs around till past full daylight, sitting up there in the sky above a big old white mountain that dwarfs all that's nearby. And here at the base of the foothills, amongst the cedars and the Scotch broom, why, just down the road and around the corner, there live a couple of mules. And here, at the base of the foothills, when the season's right, I can start my day with this view of that moon, that mountain, and a couple of mules. Now, for those that don't live here, at the base of the foothills, it might be hard to comprehend the attractions of the boondocks far from family and friends, but here at the base of the foothills is where I've made my life. And amidst all this beauty, though not immune from noise and strife, a man would have to be a natural-born fool not to enjoy the simple sight of a moon and a mountain and a couple of mules. Now, I'm no Pollyanna. There have been times that were downright bad, but the good times here at the base of the foothills are the best I ever had. So, when all the alone time ain't exactly my own idea, and my only company is some feller in a suit on TV, and all he's doing is lying to me about the price of fuel, I know just down the road and around the corner, I can see a moon, a mountain, and a couple of mules. Now, one day, I'll die. And if they are so inclined, those mysterious fates, I won't need no direction from St. Peter at no pearly gate. I'll just slide on down that hill in the early morning when the air is cool, and I'll know that I'm almost home when I see a moon, a mountain, and a couple of mules.
Well done.
Thank you,
I
sir.
Haven't heard the fates named in such a different metaphorical way in my life, but those repetitions really pull that off quite well.
Oh, thank you.
It seems like a calling that you're seeing where you live so many times in the foothills. Like, I don't like to call you over here, but and I haven't named those foothills.
That's true.
But That's where I live, and you might meet me on the foothills if you know where that moon and mountain are.
It's I guess having lived there for so long now, I've been there almost 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
it fulfills a lifelong dream because my father was Air Force, and as growing up, never spent more than 4 years in one place. So to be able to say I have this home, and I have had this home for now most of my adult life, that's a matter of pride. And I'm very happy to be there.
There's a beauty to the imagery. It seems that you cared very much about bringing that off in that way. Yeah, you enjoy this landscape here. And
I
that's
do.
Very well emphasized in that one, yeah. So that is...
A couple of mules.
A couple of mules.
Correct. Talking about my father being in the Air Force, the joke goes when I introduce myself on stage, I go, "Howdy folks, my name's Lynn. I'm not a cowboy poet, but I play one on stage." And that's because if you're a cowboy poet, you're supposed to be a real cowboy as well. That is not something I do. But my father, on the other hand, yeah, he wasn't a cowboy either. But the words in this poem are somewhat fanciful, but the sentiment behind them I find to be very true. It's a poem I call "A Careful Man." Cowboy, be careful what you do. That's what the old man always used to say, though I don't think he meant it in the strictly traditional way. Have a care when eating bacon. Now that was some of his advice, be it apple cured or alder smoked, savor each and every slice. Fear not the evils of whiskey, just know when you've had enough. And he was of the opinion life's way too short to be caught drinking the cheap stuff. He spoke of that first cup of coffee in the early pre-dawn hour. Good dogs, good horses, and God's almighty power, for he was a man of God, though he loved his earthly pleasures. Always considered my mom his greatest earthly pleasure. So, here I am, trying to pull all the joy I can out of every day. See, that's the plan, because I want to be just like my old man. A very careful man.
And you are succeeding?
Some days better than others.
But you do drink some good whiskey, don't you?
I do. Thanks to a couple of very old friends of mine, I am always generally pretty well supplied with some pretty good drinking whiskey.
What a lucky guy you are.
And let's just say I haven't the appetite for it I did when I was younger, which is a very fortunate thing. I tend to be able to savor it and treat it as a relatively rare occasion.
Yes.
And I think that makes it all the sweeter.
And bacon?
I eat a little too much bacon, to be honest with you. Not every day, mind you, but I could probably cut back on it.
But it's lovely to know the kinds of bacon and to be able to know which rasher you're picking up that morning.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It is. It's kind of exciting. You can go from hickory smoke to the jalapeno peppered bacon, and it's too much fun.
Oh. But then you cared just in a just way in naming the types. You could have gone on with a long index.
Oh, there's yes, there's many things you can do with bacon.
So we go to another work.
And I call this Lesson Learned. May God strike me dead, my very words at last camp meeting, if I ever take another drink. My old pards that know me well didn't know just quite what to think. Well, I'm not one for the straight and narrow, and never was known to show restraint. The way I was feeling that morning could turn Scratch himself into a saint. Oh, I have faced the evil whiskey and stared down the demon rum, outdrunk all my pards till I'd had my fill and then some. But the night before, Pete and I, whilst reminiscing about some gal, come right to my undoing when he brought out the mezcal. I thought to be in heaven. I met Jesus face to face. I ate the worm. But when I awoke, it felt more like the other place. My head pounded like a stampede, felt like I was riding a comet. Only relief I had was when I bent over to vomit. So I went to meeting, and then and there I changed my ways. I tell you, boys, I've come to Jesus, been sober now one whole day. Well, now the work is done. And it's after Chuck, and the boys pass around a jug. Well, it comes to me, and out of habit, I just naturally take a slug. See, it's been a tough day, and I don't reckon God would begrudge me just one little bit. And then the lightning shot down from a clear blue sky, and I just had time enough to think, "Osh." So, here I sit in the fires of hell. Well, I'll spend eternity's years. Sure learned my lesson, though. Anywhere around here I can get a beer? And old Nick himself jumps up and says, "Well, I'm really sorry, pal. But all we've got to drink in hell is, you guessed it, mezcal."
It's only the devil's offering for you. But exactly. For others, they'll say, "That sounds just right. Give me one."
That's one that... despite my lost years in the 1980s, that's one I did not repeat, the night of too much mezcal.
You had a night of mezcal.
I did. It's very loosely based on a very real experience I had with that demon.
That damned worm.
Nasty stuff. Oh, the worm.
You ate it.
Worm probably wouldn't have been any trouble if I hadn't drank the whole bottle to get to it.
That's right. You know? I love that word, et.
Yes.
Now, et is not typically a Western dialect term, is it?
Did it probably
with
Southern.
Europeans or Southerns?
I am raised in Tennessee and have... still some of my mother's family's Southern dialect just burned into my brain, and I'm assuming that's where et comes from.
A lot of that also came from Europe in the 1800s.
Okay, sure.
With the Scots and the British moving down there.
Okay.
My grandmother always said et.
Interesting.
Yeah. That was her dialect form. Anyway, let's go on to another of the poems you've selected.
All right. How about I regale you with a medley of my hit? The name of the poem is "Dance With Me, Mister." Hey, mister. Mister, are you all right? That sure was a bad one. Thought for a minute there you might take flight. You'd have thought the ground was a girl the way you up and kissed her. Yeah, you're all right. Get on up and dance with me, mister. I'll be your friend. Now, I know it don't seem like that with me bucking so hard, but show me a little grit, patience, know-how, and you'll never have a better pard. But you can't do that on the ground, so don't just sit there and fester. Get on up, dust yourself off, and dance with me, mister. Come on now, get on up. We're just getting started. This job you took on yourself, it ain't for the timid-hearted. I'm going to kick, I'm going to balk, and I am going to spin just like a Texas twister. So get on back up here and dance with me, mister. You see, when I was born, I ran free. I didn't wear all this tack. And I ain't about to give that up for no gunsel nor some hack. You got to prove to me that you're worth it and that you ain't just some weak sister. So get up, dust yourself off, and show me what you got. Come on, dance with me, mister.
And true to so many poets, you can choose whatever persona you wish. And the cowboy poet has just done that. Thank you, Lynn. That's a perfect example of one. Yeah. Metamorphosis.
Yes. It's not my only talking critter poem, but it's I only have a couple.
Well, Francis did a good job a long time ago in the movies.
Yes.
And so you can take after him with other animals, right? So, yeah, great. That was a lovely performance of
thank you.
How it just might be spoken.
Well, I'm pretty pleased with that one from the perspective and
It's got a punch to it, and it's got a good bit of spunk in it.
Yeah.
That horse is not being too kind, but yet offering the chance for another ride. Yeah.
He's willing to, if the man is worthy.
Right.
I don't know how that works out in real life. I have fallen off horses. I have never been bucked off. So that's a distinction cowboys will make sure you make. You know, it's like, no, you've never been bucked off, friend. You've fallen off. If you don't know the difference, I got a horse or two that'll be happy to show you. You know, I've never been aboard a mount that has specifically made it their lot in life to get rid of me. This is an example of what might have been. One night after Chuck, while sitting around the fire, swapping tales, telling lies, and waiting to retire, well, old Slim, he shows up with this here wheel-like contraption. More than one eyebrow got raised as he swung into action. Sets both feet a-pumping, sets that wheel a-spinning, drops down a big old lump of clay in the middle. Now, he's just sitting there a-grinning. Now, he grabs that clay with his two wet hands and sends the spatter flying just to beat the band. And then, as if by magic, a hole begins to appear in the middle while old Slim's working that clay like a maestro works his fiddle. He's right proficient, much to our surprise, and an oya begins to take shape before our very eyes. Well, Slim, he puffs up with pride and lets out a shout. He says, "Cookie, come see, I'm entertaining the boys while sitting about in the manner that you advised, and they seem to like it just fine." And Cookie comes out from behind the wagon, and you'd have thought he'd lost his mind. He sputters, he spews, he howls, just like a cat up a tree. He finally manages to choke out, "Dang it, Slim, I said cowboy poetry." The Legend of Cowboy Pottery, ladies and gentlemen.
You don't have to announce it beforehand, but let it be a surprise what the guy's doing there. You know.
The story behind that one is I was very proud of myself for coming up with that, right? And, I wasn't the first. There's a terrific, terrifically talented poet, singer-songwriter by the name of Al Doc Mel, who released an entire CD called Cowboy Pottery back in the, you know, years before I came up with this idea. But as far as I know, I didn't know that until after a mutual friend of ours told me about it. And I've since run into Doc, and he says, I did it first. Yeah, I know. he's a brilliant guy.
You bring in not just the art of pottery in this one, but the object is an oya.
Yes.
And an oya may not be the shape that people are familiar with. So how does he shape? What is the shape of this oya?
Yeah, an oya is it's a water jug, generally not made out of clay. They are hollowed out gourds, right? And it's I don't know if it's something you actually would do on a potter's wheel. It was just a word that sort of fit into the poem and sounded real cowboy to me.
Yeah.
You know.
Somebody that had been down below the border there
would know what an oya. Yeah. Mm-hmm. An oya is generally a container for water in the shape of a large squash or gourd, because that's what they are traditionally made out of. And like I said, I just like the word, so I
don't throw it in. What a super object to put in a poem.
Well, it's
nature and art.
All right. The encounter. Been up here alone a week or more, checking cows on the upper range. It's a wide circle, but I've made it before. And we'll push them down when the seasons change. It's right nice up here this time of year. The line shacks are well set up. There's plenty of grub, oats for my mare, and coffee for my tin cup. Now that comes in handy against the morning chill now that August has come to an end. And the hills have turned brown, as they often will. But they still sing their songs in the wind. We top out a rise, and there down below rides a hand from a neighboring spread. He's right cordial. He nods hello, and we ride to the stream up ahead. As he bids his good day, the thought makes its way that my moving on time may be near. Yeah, I get back to the ranch, I may just draw my pay. It's getting too darn crowded around here.
We have spoken a little about the lonely life, the lonesome life that is desirable in certain people's sensibilities of where they want to be and how they want to be anonymous.
I think that a large part of that part of the cowboy mystique comes from sheer orneriness of the cowboy. It's a type of people that are who they are and don't really care about what other people think of that. And when you can be left alone to be who you are, why, that's somehow preferable in many instances. Mm-hmm. The lonely cowboy is oftentimes lonely by his choice, his or her choice, for that matter.
It's kind of a rebel spirit, isn't it?
We seem to think so.
Yes.
You know, There's an awful lot of romance and fantasy involved in even the reality of the cowboy lifestyle. It's unfortunate I did not bring my poem, Feedlot Cowboy, with me, and I do not know it by heart. But it is one where I attempt to attack the romanticization, the fantastical aspect of riding the range and the cowboy poets, if you listen to us enough, we're full of integrity, we're full of individuality, we're full of bravery, we're foolish.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole nother side to the business that deals with people that are drunken jerks.
That's it.
And the poem Feedlot Cowboy that I unfortunately cannot perform for you is about a guy that you would hire if you had absolutely no other choice and hoped he wouldn't steal anything really important from you. And that's a large part of the American West. So it's not all beer and Skittles. It's not all integrity and, you know, my words, my bond, handshake kind of thing. Humanity tends to rear its ugly head in every aspect of life, including the great American cowboy. So,
right.
The best cowboy poetry actually comes from Australia. It's the bush poets. They take the best of what is done on this side of the Pacific and take it up five notches. They are wonderful, wonderful poets, and not dissimilar situations. So there's a bond between cowboy poetry and bush poetry. A friend of mine over in Oakdale performs bush poetry as well as his own cowboy poetry. And he has to, there's a wonderful bush poem about a bronc buster who takes his first airplane ride. And it drops the F-bomb. And so he has to apologize before doing this poem, because he doesn't want to foul up the poem, because it's kind of important to the poem. And he says, I'm sorry, but this word's in this classic poem, so I'm going to use it. So, yeah. And he gets away with it because it's a funny poem. You know, it's a ridiculously funny poem.
So. Australians can be quite raunchy, and even in their entertainments, you know. So we're, a term that fits and is absolutely necessary for art.
This was the first poem I ever had published. I had received some rejection prior to it. But I sent this one in, and it, published. It was shared on an internet site, now defunct, called cowboypoetry.com. And they had rejected me to this point, but they said, yeah, we kind of like this one, so we're going to publish it. Yes, I think I'll keep him. He's got big ears. And his bray would wake the dead, and he thinks he knows it all already, so he never listens to what's said. And I have had to show him who's boss a time or two, just to avoid havoc and mayhem. But he's still pretty game, so I think I'll keep him. Did I mention he's not too bright? Stick that big nose of his somewhere it don't belong, get us into a fight, the chances of us winning are none to mighty slim. But he's pretty good company, so yeah, I think I'll keep him. Oh, he still pulls his own weight, though he has seen better days. He's always there when the coffee boils in that early pre-dawn haze, and when that song of his bounces back to me from off the far canyon's rim, it's just kind of comforting somehow. So, yeah, I think I'll keep him. Now, most folks, they think he's a bit of a fool, staying up here all alone with me, and now, I know in my heart he can never take the place of another mule with his run-down boot heels and his curled-up hat brim. But for a human man, he ain't half bad. So, yeah, I think I'll keep him.
Yes, good to choose that persona periodically. It puts you in a... It's a different way of looking at it. But at the same time, there's a relationship here. Yes. I mean, that's what you find in horses, mules, and dogs with cowboys. They are very close in their relationships to these critters.
It's interesting because a friend of mine who is very fond of his dogs and his horses does not treat them as pets. They are co-workers. Mm-hmm. And it's not the same thing as me and my cat, you know. It's a very close bond, and it's a very real bond that I have had the privilege to at least observe, if not truly experience, in my life. So,
just speaking of your pictorial art for a moment, yes. do you choose animal imagery as you do in your poetry?
Oftentimes, yes. The horse, the other equines, the donkeys, the mules are all pretty important to much of my visual art. It is... short answer for that question is yes.
Sometimes with a rider on the range, probably, too.
Oh, of course, yeah. For years, I've sort of reached the saturation point, but for a few years there, my trademark was the snout of a grinning donkey. I managed to paint a picture that seemed to touch a number of people, so I kept repainting it on different objects and in different sizes and continue to sell it to this day.
And it was popular, yes.
Well, you know, as popular as an obscure artist it will be called, yes.
Who would want to pass up the snout?
Yes, of a grinning donkey, yes.
Yeah, donkey.
It looked... someone mentioned that it did somewhat resemble the mascot for the old TV show Hee-Haw.
Okay.
Although it's not nearly as cartoonish or anthropomorphic as that character was. Right. He was wearing a hat and coveralls and everything. You know? It's just a, I'm just a donkey.
Have you? Okay, so we've learned lessons, and you've done quite a bit of reminiscing. But is there one that you'd like to read that is a little off the beaten path?
This is my love poem, my legitimate. I have a couple that I refer to as my love poems that are not.
Irreverent.
But this one is for real. And it's called The Right Wrong One. Now, every cowboy I know has got at least one. That woman back there in his past, the thought of her still gets him all undone, even though he knew it couldn't never last. She's maybe a waitress, cracking wise, or just some spoiled college brat. Or a hippie, with them big cow eyes. Maybe she's even a Democrat. But when the right wrong one comes along, there's just nothing to be done. That tug from behind your heart so strong, there's worlds to be lost and won. And lo and behold, she's on the same page. Why, a summertime cowboy's all that, and he pretends to get all enraged as she makes fun of his old hat. And their times, they're spent joyously, though the memory's now is just a blur. Still, he won't forget the time that she told him that she knew he'd never hurt her. But change in leaves brings summer to an end, and pretty girls come to their senses. She's off up around the bend, and he starts thinking of her in past tenses. You know, we never know about life's journey. It's so full of hopes and fears. Yeah, the right, wrong one's mostly just a memory. Of course, some been married for 40 years.
Yeah, we marry oxymorons. And our wives marry one, too.
You, so. Well, if we're lucky. That's the one where the hero doesn't end up with the mule instead of the girl.
The delight and sort of the fright of it is there in that. You've got a counter in there. There's something very attractive there, but at the same time, is she going to find attraction also? You know,
That one, again, a little bit of personal experience, a lot of observation. Much of what I write, I think, comes mostly from observation. Writing from the heart is a tough thing to do, and it's quite frankly much easier to look at somebody else and go, I'd like to write about that, what they're doing. And that way you can put your own spin on it and not feel that you've, you know, bared anything you don't want to bear to somebody.
Very good. Yeah,
I always talk about this, look at it as, well, this happened to a friend of mine. Okay.
Yes.
That kind of thing.
Right. It was Eliot that said, you shouldn't put things about personality in poems, you know, let alone your own, because you don't even know you've got one. And of course, he didn't seem to be the sort that had much of a living, vital personality, you know, in his very stiff manner. And some might think his poetry is quite stiff in its way nowadays, 100 years after he was famous. But what you're saying about your opportunity, you say that you're not a cowboy, you haven't lived the real depths, the hell of the cowboy life, but you're able to write this so well without having lived it, because you're able to employ your imagination beyond anything you experienced. A lot of this has to be imaginative not from, like you say, the lived experience. And that is a good thing for a poet, to be able to go off in left field or right field.
That's true. And the other end of it is the audience, the listening audience. A lot of them have the same context that I do, and that we do as children of the 50s and 60s when the cowboy mythos was so incredibly pervasive. There were 39 Westerns on any given week in 1960, I think it was. And that's with three channels.
The mythology was dense.
It was. And this is where, so I'm not the only wannabe out there, lifelong wannabe out there. I think a lot of the response I get, the positive response I get from the audience is because we come from the same, generation, the same background, and they have the same, they come out of the same, like I said, that's kind of a $6 word, but mythos. Yes, that I do. The mythology of the American West was so pervasive in entertainment when I was a kid that and remained so that some of the positive audience response, I think, grows out of that shared experience that we had and some of the imagination and some of the imagery I choose has a lot to do with the what I call the real R-E-E-L West.
Yes, the real the filmic cinema world.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the TV world. Yeah. How many kids, our age, grew up with a cowboy outfit for Christmas?
Yep.
Or a gal with a Annie Oakley outfit? And even an American Indian outfit with just the leather waistcoat and some chap type things and slippers to pull it off, as well as a wig. That wig with the pigtails down the side of feather up. That iconic stuff is, we lived it for a while soon after Christmas when we got them and put them on.
Yep. And then they disappeared. And many of us, some of us like me, this is where the hat came from. I spent years without pretending to be a cowboy, but at one point I just put the hat on and decided that it would stay on. So yes, all hat, no cattle, and proud of it. there's nothing. And the thing I have found about the world of cowboy poetry, quote unquote, is that nobody minds as long as you're honest about who you are and what you do. It would be one thing if I presented myself as a genuine hand and able to do things, well on a ranch and be a good writer, pretend to be a good writer. But I don't.
Okay. Well.
And I am accepted because of that. Yeah. Okay. Once in a while I'm treated like a pet coon, but which that's okay with me. If people are laughing, they're probably not going to hurt me. So that's right. Kind of my philosophy.
Okay, that's pretty humble attitude. But I think that's right in the groove.
Yeah.
As you explain it, there's a poem definitely in that groove.
Sure.
You don't have to be confessional, because confessional poetry at once had its vogue, I suppose. And it's sort of on that's slipped down the hill. The personal revelation, personal need for commiseration and so on. But that's a great attitude, a poet's attitude towards that world out there.
Well, it's the old axiom, be who you are, everybody else is taken.
Well, you said there's morality in some of these cowboy poems. There's the groove, I suppose, humble virtue. This is Sound Poetry. I've been your host, David Gilmore, with Lynn Kopelke.